Hi, good afternoon again. I'm Joe Stankitis. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for the Monroe Plan for Medical Care in Rochester, New York. Are there any clinicians here? Okay. So I'll have to do some explaining here, like probably what it's all about. But my background is in internal medicine, although I have a faculty appointment at the University of Rochester in the Department of Family Medicine as a clinical associate professor, so go figure that one out. But it's more like in a health systems things in my role. I've been at the Monroe Plan for about 15 plus years, and before we get going further, I've got no relationships to disclose, though I gotta wonder, maybe I want to have some, because you could be pretty wealthy, I would guess, and I think that's the whole purpose of it. But that said, the Monroe Plan is an interesting animal. We were founded in 1970. We are a healthcare services organization, but really what I would call a super individual practice association of physicians. We've got about, well, right now we've got about 12,000 providers on our panel. And we're a 501c6 not-for-profit entity, so we don't pay out dividends to any shareholders or else anything like that. And our mission has really been focused on taking care of the underserved in the upstate New York area. We have about 13 counties for which we're at full risk for Medicaid Managed Care, Child Health Plus, and Family Health Plus products. And that covers about 150,000 enrollees, and then another 100,000 enrollees are in a 50-50 risk share with Excellus Blue Cross and Blue Shield. We our service area in general is about 39 counties in upstate New York, so we go all the way from the Pennsylvania border up to the Canadian border, up in the North Country in the Adirondacks, and then down to just north of Westchester County. Finger Lakes, if you really like Riesling wine, we've got world-class Riesling wines there, and it's gorgeous there with the lakes and everything, if you ever had a chance to go up to upstate New York. But that all said, given the fact that we're talking about disasters today, my disaster is probably not as sensational as what the previous speakers have been alluding to and whatever, but it, nevertheless, it's a horrendous disaster, and it deals with diabetes. About 26 million Americans have diabetes. About a third of them have no clue that they have it. It's the number one cause of blindness in the United States, number one cause of renal failure. It escalates the rates of cardiovascular disease for heart disease, stroke, neuropathies. In other words, like you lose the sensation in your lower extremities and other limbs. People tend to have issues with the vascular in the sense where if it's not well controlled, people have amputations of their limbs and all that. It's not a pretty sight. It costs the United States a lot of money annually. And unfortunately for the populations that my organization serves, safety net populations, particularly in Medicaid, there's a disproportionate number of minorities that we serve, and for them, diabetes is a disproportionate issue. If you look at the African American community, the Native Americans, it's really rampant, and it's something that, although it's not sensational, it's a big disaster. So going back around 2006, my organization had the opportunity to get a Robert Wood Johnson grant to take a look at how Medicaid could take the lead in improving care within our community. So we were focusing on Monroe County, which is the county where Rochester is located at, and we decided that we wanted to take a look at diabetes care. And what we felt we could do is try to enhance the way the care is being delivered for people with diabetes. If you want to deal with a chronic illness, clearly the patients got to be part of the equation, but what we were finding is that the primary care physicians, which you really need to deliver good chronic care, might not necessarily be up to speed in terms of what the expectations are for care delivery for that. So what we did was we put together a program through the RWJ grant to try to enhance care delivery and have that happen through the primary care physicians receiving the National Committee for Quality Assurance's Diabetes Recognition for the care that they do provide for individuals with diabetes. And the way that it works is there's about 13 different, not 13, but 11 different measures. It's a self-audit that the physicians do, and about 5% of them get audited by NCQA to keep people honest. But what you're looking at is hemoglobin A1C control. For you non-clinicians, this is the way that one can determine how effectively an individual is controlling their blood glucose. When I was in practice before hemoglobin A1Cs came out, I could see patients that would come in and their fasting glucose would be absolutely perfect, yet then you hear from their families, wow, they're eating all this, all these ice creams, desserts and everything, and they're getting complications. Well, hemoglobin A1C, like, you can't gain at all by being good for 2 or 3 days. You know, what it looks at is what's gone on like for the past 90 days. So that's one of the components to this. Blood pressure control is really critical for individuals with diabetes. It's probably one of the most important things that one can do because, again, that really gets into the cardiovascular side of things, also the renal side of things. As I mentioned before, it's the leading cause of blindness, and one of the recommendations is that someone with diabetes should have their eyes examined annually by an eye specialist, ophthalmologist, or an optometrist to look for retinopathy, because if you can like pick it up early enough, you can do something to prevent its progression to blindness. Smoking status is also an important component to this. The way that I view smoking with diabetics is it's no different than if you walked into a shed with dynamite with a lit cigarette. Like a diabetic that smokes, their probability of having a cardiovascular event really goes up astronomically. So you want to know whether someone's a smoker that is a diabetic. You want to also help them quit smoking if they are smoking because it'll help them more than anything else. Then LDL control, that gets into the blood lipids, and then nephropathy assessments looking at the renal function or if someone's already on an ACE inhibitor drug or an ARB, which will protect the kidneys to a greater degree than if they're not on that. That's important. And then finally, the foot examination. It's amazing how people with diabetes might not even feel that they're stepping on glass or else anything like that. They're prone to infections. They need to be really like checked out well, and that's one of the components for care. So what we had with this was initially between 2006 and then 2008, we got about 45 physicians within Monroe County to achieve this recognition. So insofar as we were concerned, they are doing the right thing insofar as the recommendations are out there for the delivery of care for people with diabetes. We also were thinking, well, gee, in order to be able to accomplish this, most physicians would have to be really trying to apply the chronic care model that Ed Wagner from the McCall Institute proposed back about 10, 15 years ago, where you really are very proactive in terms of having a patient registry, really outreaching individuals with chronic illnesses to really engage them in care. And we thought, well, gee, you know, maybe there is some spillover not only for the diabetes care, but maybe other chronic illnesses. So what we decided to take a look at is what was happening with these physicians and the patients with diabetes like that they had and their patients in general for the adult prevention quality indicators, PQIs. These are indicators that CMS has out there. I know in our state, New York State Department of Health ranks the health plans like based upon their performance with this. And these are avoidable events that if an individual got the appropriate care in the primary care setting should not have occurred. So if you look at these for the diabetes-related ones, you're dealing with uncontrolled diabetes, admissions to the hospital, long-term complication, admissions to the hospital, short-term complications. Were they getting their toes amputated, feet amputated, legs amputated? Again, that's a bad outcome that if someone is well-controlled really should not occur. And then other conditions besides the diabetes one, and we took out the low birth weight because we're talking about primary care is for the adults here. We're not like talking about OBGYN, an internist like I wouldn't be managing typically a pregnant woman. So we're looking at adult asthma admissions, angina without any sort of a procedure. So it's not that they were having a cardiac event and then had a percutaneous stent inserted, bacterial pneumonia admissions, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease admissions, congestive heart failure admissions, dehydration, hypertension admissions, which you really shouldn't see at all out there, a perforated appendix or else a urinary tract infection admit. So we thought, what will this show? So our study design was to look at the Monroe County physicians that were in the Monroe plan. And we had two comparison groups. One were the physicians who received the NCQA diabetes recognition for more than 12 months, and that numbered 148. And then the physicians who had not had the diabetes recognition for greater than 12 months or at all, and that number was 413. And we compared the rates for the 13 PQI indicators. And our time period was simply to look at what occurred during 2011. What we found was kind of interesting. The non-recognized clinicians had the number of PQIs at 248, and their rate per 1,000 patients was 1,119. If you looked at the recognized clinicians, their rate was 776 per 100,000 patients. And the diabetes-related ones, clearly the recognized docs did a lot better than the non-recognized docs. And overall, what we looked at, the overall PQI rate was 30%+ lower with the recognized physicians. The PQI rates for the diabetes PQIs was over 50% lower among the diabetes recognized physicians. And the non-diabetic PQI rate was 20% lower for the recognized docs. So the other issue that you'll probably be hearing about now after me is burnout with physicians, but for primary cares, it's really been an underappreciated specialty. And with the ACA changes and all that, there's going to be a lot being put on the docs. And part of this is some of it has to do with compensation and also recognition for what they do. And we felt that it would be a good way to pay for performance if you take a look at what the physicians have been doing with the diabetes recognition. Again, they're doing the right thing. They put the systems in place to really work well. They're getting really good outcomes as a result of that. So what we instituted, and this goes back about 4 or 5 years ago, a diabetes care management fee that we would pay to the physicians who receive this recognition. It's $8.50 per a diabetic member per month. So that's about $102 extra for each patient that you have that's one of ours that has diabetes per year. So what we ended up with 915 patients that the docs have got that have the recognition, we've spent $93,000 and change for it. When you took a look at what the savings were insofar as the avoided PQIs with these physicians, the savings were $188,000 plus per year. So I could make a very convincing argument to my chief financial officer, this is a good thing to do. We are really in a situation where we are really building really good relationships with our clinicians. And again, if you think about it, with an underserved population, you want to make it something that people do want to do. And if you give them the recognition, the likelihood of them to continue to really serve the population will be there. So the ROI, which is the return on investment, which is the term that the finance guys use, and it could be financial. There's also ROIs, in my estimation, that look at the social gains, too, that go on. But the financial ROI is really, we want to look at what are the savings from the avoided PQIs, and then what were the costs for the program that you put into play with the management fees. And it comes out that the ROI is over 2, which means anything at greater than 1 is that you're going to be making money really off of what you're doing. And a 2-to-1 return, I think, is really well worth making the argument that we need to recognize the primary care docs for the good work that they do. So that's kind of basically where things are at. The conclusions that and the implications for what we've done, at least for now, is that we believe that the physicians who have the NCQA physician recognition appear to have lower rates for the preventable quality indicators. Now, and we believe that it might be due to practice improvement activities that were implemented to achieve the recognition. Again, if you've got a disease registry where you know who all of your diabetics are within your practice, your likelihood of being able to engage them and to really get them in a really good care really goes up tremendously, and I think that that was part of it. You could also believe that it means that only high-performing physicians apply, like for the NCQA recognition. Yeah, I think that's something that we'll be examining further on the go forward. We've been looking at some of our data from previous years, and it's starting to look like a situation where the newer docs really take off with this and they run. The older ones, I think, the thing that you run into with primary cares these days is that you've got so many people coming at them wanting to do all kinds of preventive services. I don't think they've got the time to do it all, so they'll focus in on one or two big things. So, for example, if you only have a 15-minute visit, which I think is really a travesty for anyone with chronic illness, you can't really go through, well, do you smoke or not smoke? Are you depressed? I mean, you can go through a whole litany of things, and then by the time you're done, the visit's over. So I think we've got to really get into the mindset for the patient-centered medical home and really build into play reimbursement models that really will support the primary care to really do what's right, and not just be the physician who's doing the service, but the team effort within the practice with nurses. Even medical assistants are phenomenal folks because a lot of patients really connect with them, and they find out more than the doctors do. I mean, I used to find out more, like, from my secretaries about what was going on with some of my patients, and they would let on to me, and that would really be huge. And that's part of the team thing. And then the other thing is that it really is a potential ROI, return on investment, when you reward physicians for generating cost savings for better care delivery. Because, again, they've been underappreciated for years, and I can speak to that as a PCP in my past life. I kind of got smart and got out of the direct care business that way. But the thing is, I think they're going to be needed very badly on the go forward. There's going to be huge demands, and I think that health plans and various other agencies really need to recognize that need and also support them, not only fiscally, but also with all kinds of resources and also other services. So that's kind of basically it, and hopefully this wasn't a disaster. So.